Hi, I'm Brian.
And I'm Sharon.
I had a 40-year porn addiction.
Porn was an unwelcome guest for 32 years of our marriage.
I found hope and freedom when I attended a Gateway to Freedom weekend.
And I found hope and the courage to begin my healing journey while attending Wives Care.
Don't be like us and allow porn to wreak havoc in your lives.
Reach out to Be Broken today.
To learn more about Gateway to Freedom, 3-day intensive for men, and Wives Care online groups, visit BeBroken.org or call 210-822-8201. That's BeBroken.org or 210-822-8201. Good day, friends. Jonathan Darty here with another edition of the PSR Podcast. You know, I want to remind you that we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In today's episode, we have back on the program our friend and colleague, Andrew Arthur. He's a mediator specializing in faith-based mediation, and he's here to talk about the delicate topic of separation in relationships and how to navigate them with hope. We delve specifically into therapeutic separation, which is a process aimed at healing and potentially reuniting couples facing serious challenges like infidelity and sexual brokenness. Andrew highlights the importance of having a support team, including counselors, mediators, and spiritual advisors, to collectively guide this tough journey for couples. We also discuss the emotional and operational aspects of separation, the need for individual care, and the crucial role of safety and trust in working towards reconciliation. It's a hopeful and insightful conversation for anyone facing relational struggles. For more information about Andrew and his resources, visit GenesisChristianMediation.com. For additional resources, visit our website at BeBroken.org or check out all the links that we're going to put in today's show notes. And as always, friends, I'm going to invite you and really ask you to rate and review the podcast after listening because, friends, this really does help others to find this content. Now, let's unpack today's conversation about therapeutic separation with Andrew. Well, all right, we've got back with us Andrew Arthur. So, Andrew, welcome back to the program.
Glad to be here, Jonathan. Looking forward to the conversation.
I think this is maybe the third go around for you on the podcast. I apologize that I did not, you know, look up the last podcast, but podcast listeners and viewers, just you can go to our podcast page on the website and just type in Andrew Arthur and his episodes will come up. But before we dive into this specific topic of maybe trying to think through how to help couples who are maybe needing to have a period of separation in their relationship in order to either heal and repair things that have gone wrong, tell a little bit about what you do, especially in the space of mediation.
Yeah, well, as a faith-based mediation firm, we spend our time in really two areas: family, which is what this podcast will be about, and then nonprofits. So we work with churches, Christian organizations, other nonprofits. And the whole goal is to equip people with more relationship skills and conflict management skills so that they can be more effective in their relationships or in their workspaces or in their worship spaces.
That's really good. Well, obviously in the ministry that we operate in, we're coming across couples all the time that are having to deal with really, really hard issues in their relationship, issues of sexual brokenness, issues of unfaithfulness, infidelity, all kinds of things that can really drive an enormous wedge and rift into the relationship. And sometimes, whether it is planned or unplanned, separation so often becomes part of that navigation of what to do in that brokenness in the relationship. So let's just dive into the conversation in terms of that whole aspect of maybe what the benefit or just what separation means or what it could mean for a couple that's trying to deal with really hard situations.
Yeah, that's a really hard list. that you gave. Those are all really painful and difficult things. And there's no sprint finish on navigating those, fixing those, right? And sometimes in the midst of those, even what could feel or should be like normal communication or normal decision making, just on top of that trauma becomes even harder or more, it becomes more difficult, more adversarial, excuse me. And that's really when you start looking at separations. And I may define them or look at them differently than counselors or whomever. But if you're not staying in the same bedroom, you're separated in a mm-hmm. traditional sense of the word. And I'm not talking about, you know, a couple nights on the couch or in the guest bedroom or a month, right? You are in residence somewhere else than together. Okay. The only difference between an in-home and out-of-home is whether you can manage the conflict or avoid each other well enough that you can still be under the same roof or still parent together if you have children, right? I think that's a key differentiator, right? Is if you can't manage yourself well enough to be in that environment without doing further harm, then that's really where you start asking the question, do we need to be in separate spaces and things like that?
Yeah. So obviously there can be a lot of factors that can mm-hmm. lead to what you called that kind of separate residence, whether mm-hmm. it be in-house or out of house. When you're trying to come in and obviously let's maybe back up a little bit because we might want to paint sort of the broad picture scenario of what we're dealing with here or what we're talking about. We're not talking about couples that are in the active process of divorcing. We're talking about couples that are in a separate state of, well, under the umbrella of being married, they're living separately for whatever the reason may be. Maybe what we're dealing with in terms of like there's a sexual brokenness and there's a betrayal there and that, but it could be any number of things. What often leads to this idea that a couple feels like they need to stay in that state of separateness? And how might you, as somebody who's this professional mediator, want to help them maybe navigate what could it look like to not remain permanently in that separate state?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let's define this separation by the understanding that in a therapeutic separation, there has to be the intent or possibility that reunification is possible. They may not fully believe the other person will change or the relationship will change, but they're open to figuring out or finding out if it will. They may have, they may be really optimistic and know we can get through this, right? I guess on that barometer, anywhere in between that, if one person says, no, I'm out, then it's not a therapeutic separation, right? You're on wrap to a dissolution, right? You're preparing for separate lives, right? So if someone still has hope or a desire to see if the relationship can work, then really, when we come in, it's because a church or a counselor or the couple themselves has said, we are at an impasse. We don't know what to do. We recognize this relationship is trending to fall apart or could fall apart. And we know that we don't know how to fix this.
Yeah. And so, right. So I'm glad that you said it that way, because sometimes the idea that there has to be a baseline of agreement, even if your feelings are not totally in line with that yet, or even your beliefs aren't totally in line with it. Meaning like, but the idea that there needs to be at least an agreement that says we're not totally leaning out. Like this is about trying to figure out what do we do as a couple with whatever caused the rift, with whatever the you know, the reason for the separation is. Now, obviously, there's a lot of different dynamics based on people's personal circumstances that led to the separation. But can you try to lay out maybe a few common, I don't know if you call them ground rules or maybe expectations, or what you would try to help a couple to start seeing so that they can deal with whatever that big issue is that led to or perpetuates the separation?
Yeah, commonalities. I think what I said just a minute ago is number one, we're stuck. We don't know how to fix this. They've tried marriage therapy before. They may have been fired by a marriage therapist. It may have been years ago that they tried this. One or both could be in individual therapy, and their individual therapist sent them my way, right? Because they're speaking different languages. They're not able to work things out. I think the big difference between in-home and out-of-home is that the conflict gets nasty and it gets really toxic. It might be volatile. You have some emotional dysregulation involved. You have one or both parties not taking any ownership. And it might be historical issues where one spouse has been saying, hey, hello, over here, this needs attention. Nothing's changing. And it becomes more and more positional, more and more fighting over it. And so those are, I would say, commonality moments when we're going to get a phone call and say, how can we help these guys?
And then when a couple then comes to that place of saying, one, we're in this state of separation and regardless of what the reason is, but two, there's a desire to say, we can't stay in this state of living perpetually. What are some of the first steps then to take towards resolution, whatever that could look like in the relationship? And what does that process then look like of trying to not be separated any longer?
Right. That's a great question. And it does vary. But I think overwhelmingly, the first step is agreeing that you need a team to help you. Right. When you're finally unclenching your hands and saying, there is nothing we can do in and of ourselves to do this. We need to get the right people around us. That's step number one, because so the ones that spin and spin out of this are the ones who don't do the work. And if you're coming thinking something miraculous is going to happen and you're not willing to roll up your sleeves, then there's, you're not going to see the results or the reunification as soon as you hoped. And most of these, I'll be frank, the quickest one I've ever seen was 8 months.
Okay. Can you tell us more about what that looked like? I mean, not that the 8 months is the prototype, but you're saying that's the fastest. So hopefully telling people is this is not going to be a weekend project that you're going to figure these things out.
No, and they were an out-of-home separation, so there was substance abuse involved, but there was genuine ownership on the person abusing substances, treatment, multiple different care partners working with this person. The other spouse who wasn't abusing substance was also getting therapy and in groups and working on her attitude and perspective and position towards her husband. It was they came in with, I would say, hitting the ground running.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
And we were quick to de-escalate their lives by agreeing on a financial plan, agreeing how they were going to interact with. All their children were adult, right? So they, you know, how they were going to interact with family, what they were going to be talk about, what they wouldn't talk about, who owned the story, who didn't, or what aspects of the story, right? So they came in and really early on. That's number two, is form a plan. right? And the plan, it's not just a, hey, we're going to go get an apartment, or we're going to do this, or no, it's what are the hoped outcomes we have? What is our emotional and spiritual health plan? What are we agreeing to be accountable? It's a financial plan and a detailed one. It can involve even a post-nup. Sometimes people want to put together a post-nup because they know if it doesn't work, they're worried that they might lose that amicability in the deterioration of the relationship. So they'll put those measures in ahead of time. If you have children, it's coming to terms and agreeing with how you're going to be parents together, right? Because you're not divorcing, so I'm not using the word co-parents. You're preparing. How are you going to parent while you guys do your work? Then our relationship boundaries. What are those? How are we going to communicate? All those kind of things.
Yeah, and how important then in that plan? Because a lot of what you're talking about there is about the connection in terms of these things that absolutely are part of the union of the couple. How important though in that plan also is whatever individual care that each spouse needs to get for whatever the issues might have been.
Super, super important. And that's what the emotional and spiritual health plan is. You're agreeing in each phase, there's going to be different partners or professionals you're working with to work on you, right? And in some instances, couples aren't ready to work together. So it's individual therapy. We get ROIs going. So now we want the individual therapist talking to each other because we don't want my side bias happening or confirmation bias, right? They're getting one narrative. And so they're over time, one narrative, even in best intention, it's going to drift you, right? Right. So we want to establish connection happening so that can they both individual therapists can be working and pointing inward, leaning in rather than accidentally leaning out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, obviously, you know, you can have all the right intentions in the world. This couple can have all the right intentions in the world. They can be truly wanting to seek the individual help that they need. They can be wanting to have even a shared outcome of saying, man, it'd be great if there could be full reconciliation here and that, you know, what is best is still yet to come in our relationship. But nothing ever goes perfectly and smoothly. So what are some of the most common obstacles and barriers that couples have from going from a state of separation to then trying to reunify?
If I lump them in categories, you're going to have parenting style differences. You're going to have differing perspectives on the impact of the problems in the relationship. And what percentage, like in those moments, people often want to get into percentages, right? Ownership percentages. As a mediator, I don't step into percentages. If you own 1%, you own something, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we focus on. I think people also get caught up in repeating behaviors that escalate conflict. How they talk to each other, whether they listen, the idea of worst intent or best intent, that is a hard one depending on the pain and the different circumstances involved. That often gets away in the way of things when one or both spouses believe the worst about the other. It then becomes really hard to repair if you think in each potential moment of conflict, if you think the other person's out to injure you or do further harm.
Yeah. And how do you also navigate the fact that no two individuals in a relationship operate at exactly the same pace? when it comes mm-hmm. to healing and growth and understanding and, you know, action and all of that. So how do you just navigate that constant fluctuation between, you know, you may have a week or two where it's like, man, the husband, he's really taken off and the wife is stuck. And then the next 2 weeks, the wife is really taken off and the husband's stuck. And how is that? Let me frame the question this way. How does that give opportunity for learning what it means to actually heal and repair the relationship?
So that's a great question. And some of that, it depends on the role of who's involved in the care team. So if you're meeting with a counselor every week, they're going to have more impact on some of that emotional processing than I am. Right? Because if I'm meeting with a couple for two or three sessions up front to develop their plan, but they're not ready for joint work, their individual therapists are going to be doing a lot of the heavy lifting. And I'm going to check in either as needed or at our 60 to 90 day mark, depending on what the couple, how conflicted the couple is, right? And how much bubble wrap I need to have when working with them, right? So if I'm meeting consistently with someone, then yes, I am absolutely gauging that. But sometimes that's not my role, depending on the season of care that they're in.
Mm-hmm. What are some other things that, you know, because I'll be the first to admit, I don't even know all the questions to ask when it comes right into something like this. So what are some other things that would be important for our listeners to know about, especially those who are either, they understand we are resident, we're living in this resident separation, or those who are even maybe even contemplating, we maybe need some space, we need some distance, we got to work on these things. What are some other things that are necessary to know about separation?
Yeah. Well, number one is asking yourself, what do you want your children's experience to be? So if you have kids in the home, the first thing is, how do I not let all of the anguish and impact trickle down onto them? What am I doing to make sure this is as, I guess, speed bump less as possible for them? And once I step back from kids and I'm thinking, what do I need to do? Is the first thing is, all the data suggests that if you do this unintentionally, meaning you don't have help to navigate this process, don't have a team in place, the odds of success are very low. Very low, extremely low.
And success being reunification and reconciliation, right?
Correct. Yeah. Extremely low, because what essentially you're asking is the two people who got to this point, and if you're self-managing this, and you have no outside help other than maybe a therapist here or there, and you're expecting things to become different, then that's you're not going to get the
result. That old classic definition of insanity, right? Doing the same right thing over and over again, expecting right a different result. Yeah.
Right. Right. And in most cases, you need three people on your care team. You need a counselor or counselors. You need a mediator to help you with the operational side of this. And you need a pastor or someone spiritually that's in connect with the couple so that you have this form, this circle of care around that addresses all three major areas, spiritual, emotional health, and operational health to help you. That's when we see the odds and the data go through the roof on opportunity for reconciliation.
It's kind of like, you know, what we discovered over the years is in the recovery element of our ministry and dealing with men who are breaking free from unwanted sexual behaviors, we recognize that same kind of three-dimensional strategy where when a man will have a group, a counselor, and an intensive, it exponentially increases the odds of long-term transformational success in his recovery. So, and by the way, as a Christian, I don't think the idea of threes is any surprise to us in terms of it being a powerful metaphor for so many things in life. I mean, you know, even the triangle, it's the strongest of all shapes, right? So let's talk a little bit more about maybe coming to that, maybe moving through the process and starting to realize that, for lack of a better way to put it, you're seeing this couple is seeing a little bit of the light at the end of the tunnel. What does it then look like for reunification or reconciliation? And what is the care that's needed beyond that point? Because I can't imagine that that's like the finish line, like, oh, we've reconciled and so now we're done. What does it look beyond that?
Well, so when myself and other care team members can tell that we are doing well in the not doing further harm, we're addressing inner pain, right? And we're able to navigate relational difficulties without volatility, right? Then we start saying, okay, what's the joint work that we can do? And so there are assessments that I do. Even some counselors use assessments and things like that. And we get under the hood and we look, is there issues around conflict and communication? Is there financial issues? So we start addressing some of these problem areas, because once there's an element of safety, because that's super important in separations, right? Because sometimes, well, I should say often, there's an element of no safety for one mm-hmm. or both spouses, whether that's because of trauma, because of what, or because of how people interact with each other. That's big, right? Safety has to happen, right? Because if you're not safe, you can't work on the next block, and that's trust, right? And so,
before we go too far past that, can you briefly then define for couples what you mean when you're saying safety? What is that? Right. What does that entail?
So safety means you can be respectful of one another's boundaries. You can be accountable to the process, and you've demonstrated the ability to listen and navigate mm-hmm. without retaliation.
Okay. So continue on with what you were saying as you then go to trust and some of these other things.
Yeah. So, you know, if you can start working on trust, that's when you start repairing conflict and communication patterns, right? Because you need healthy conflict in a relationship in order to increase connection and build more trust. So people start learning new skills and new tools about being, you know, that they can use to navigate the difficulties or the different perspectives that they may have in different areas of their life. And ultimately in there, we're handing off to a marriage therapist, or we're starting with groups of four with two individual therapists and the couple, right? If that's the safe way to do it at first. And we want to hand off to a marriage therapist, because as they get closer to unification, we want someone to hand this process off to.
Now, I know that I'm certain that there's couples that are listening to this that are at all maybe various stages of brokenness in their relationship. Some of them may be separated in-house or out of house. They're hearing you, Andrew, and they're going, I'm hearing, you know, a lot of work, a lot of time, a lot of sweat and tears in this. Can you share why this kind of work is so valuable to the couple who has made that at least baseline agreement that they would rather lean in than lean out?
So what I'm hearing you ask me is, where's hope, or why am I signing up for all of this work?
Yeah. Why would I go on this journey that you're telling me what you've seen, the shortest period of time for it to be successful is 8 months, that's probably saying the average is a lot longer than that. Yes. I'm asking you to share a bit of hope.
Yeah. Well, I would give two things. The first thing is the grass is not greener. Mm. When you think about the alternative, and if the alternative is divorce, the ripples and the chasms and the division and the pain and the trauma that comes as a result of a divorce are immeasurable. It's very hard. I've been through one, right? I know that story. I know the impact. I know what happened. And if you think that your problems that you have with the other person are there today, they don't disappear. And in fact, they often become more pronounced because there's no, you're not accountable to each other anymore. And you have kids. If you have kids, then you're stuck in the business of raising kids without a mechanism to really address any past problems. So some of it mm-hmm. at that point, then you just have to set down and whether the behavior or pattern keeps repeating itself or not, right? And so the ripple effects of choosing no are worse than you think. Now, in some cases, divorce is necessary, right? Mm-hmm. So let's not say that we tolerate pain and injury and no safety because we're afraid of divorce. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying, don't think that divorce is any easier than separation. And in some cases, separation is easier in most cases, unless you're dealing with significant trauma and repeated patterns of abuse and all those kind of things, which are not good. The divorce is going to be relief at that point, right? But in many cases, separation is actually easier than divorce because they take about the same amount of time. The average divorce, you're looking at a year to 2 years to go through anyways.
Yeah. And that's the point I wanted to make is thinking about the time is what would happen if the time that it would normally take on average for you to go through dissolving this relationship, if you were able to go through a therapeutic separation and say, even if we're angry with each other and we've got pain and we don't really know what could happen next, but there's that agreement that says we are not wanting to choose to end this at this point, but we have a lot of questions and we don't know how to get them all answered. What if you invested that typical time that it would take to dissolve the relationship into what you're talking about saying, let's go through building a care team and having the right people around us to help us see what could be. Because here's the thing. I think there's actually more couples than we realize. And some of the statistics are starting to bear this out, that there's way more couples than we realize that don't think or don't even know that there could be a third option. You know, the third option being what we're talking about here. The two options, first being get divorced or just remain in a state of total misery and dysfunction. And it's like, there's actually a third option. There's a third way. There's other things that can happen. And so I love what you're bringing to this conversation. As we kind of wrap up here, Andrew, what are just some other things that you really would want the couples out there to know that are at all various stages of this journey to help them maybe take whatever their next best step might be?
Yeah. The first one is early intervention. Call and talk to someone early on, right? You'll get my website. I mean, you can talk to us, whatever, me, whomever, right? Talk to someone early on because there's a massive difference between navigating these issues early and upfront than doing it as more of a practice of crisis management.
Mm-hmm.
Such a massive difference. In fact, there's one couple that I'm working with right now that I have met with 1.5 times. I had a 90-day check-in via text, and I'm not going to see them probably till the six-month mark, but I'm getting text about how God is moving and doing miraculous things in amongst their, they've got, they have now, have a, they, we, they've moved into marital counseling, they've had individual work, and they're working with their care team, and it's a joy for them right now. And they live in separate places, but they're seeing God move powerfully. But they did it early when they were asking themselves questions. Is this the right thing? What do I do here? And when they first saw me, one was leaning in and the other was, I'm exploring leaning out. That's where they started. Just even in that, just recognizing that moment, and they got help early, versus ones where they don't do it early, and I'm coming in, and their team coming in, you know, after they've been separated for 4 to 6 months, and there's so much damage, they can't see past that. That's number one. Number two is I just, when you're thinking about control, right? This idea of control, it's so hard to let go of the wheel in an area of life where you feel like you're receiving the most injury. Mm. Right? It's so hard to let go of that. And that's so important because God has an idea. He has a plan. He likes to make beautiful things out of hard spaces.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the biggest barrier is our own. We get in the way of him or just ourself, right? And one of those ways is when you do a therapeutic separation and there's a misnomer. So when I throw out the word forgive, everyone gets hackles and, oh no, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee you, I am not talking about forgiveness like you've probably heard it growing up. Like growing up for me, forgive was go say sorry to your brother. Go, you need to apologize for this, right? It was transactional, right? So to support that was the whole, you know, Christ and Peter, 70 times seven, right? And so mm-hmm. I grew up with this idea of very transactional model of forgiveness, but that's not what I'm talking about. Forgiveness is actually, if you read through the scriptures and look at what God, it's actually a rhythm or an exchange between us and God that only has something to do with the other person when it's safe. We can ourselves, independent of anyone else, can commit to a forgiveness lifestyle. And all that means is that we're willing to say, oh, I've been hurt, or oh, I've hurt somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Validate the impact either on either side of that. Deal with the inner pain and choose surrender to God. And it has nothing to do with the other person. And so I think that when you think about therapeutic separation, whether the end of the story is written, and I don't, whether it's divorce or stay together long-term, whatever, that forgiveness for you as a person and God is so critical.
Mm-hmm.
So critical.
Yeah, and I think that's a good place to land is the way I would put it is the journey is going to be good for you in what it does for you as a person, and it has potential, really good potential for your relationship. So I right. say it's worth it regardless of what does happen to the relationship, because at the end of the day, we can never control what another person chooses to do. But if we'll go on a journey, like you're saying, of, man, there's self-discovery in that, there's healing that can happen, there's a deeper understanding of God in that, there's a connection with professionals who know how to care for your soul and your mind and your process as well, why wouldn't we want to go on that journey just for the personal benefit that it can have for right. us growing in our lives? And so I just want to encourage couples with that. Now, as we wrap up, Andrew, where can people go to learn more about you and some of the services that you offer?
Well, first on that, what we just talked about, I want to shout out a model. There's a model of therapy called restoration therapy, Dr. Terry Hargraves.
Mm-hmm.
That concept of the idea of forgiveness we talked about is from part of his model. It's a really great one because it really fits well with mediative perspective of it. And that first area that we just talked, it's called insight. Right? Forgiveness is a lot about insight and awareness, and it's his model. If you want to look him up, you can. He has some really good content on that. Where can you find me? Our firm, GenesisChristianMediation.com. It's a robust website. You can navigate it, find some answers to some questions, easy contact. We just launched it in November. We're pretty excited about it. So lots more to come on that from content and connection and things like that. So
that's great. Well, Andrew, it's been great. Thank you for sharing your time and your wisdom with us today.
I'm pleased and pleasured and honored to be back. I love what you guys do at Be Broken and on this podcast.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, we're going to post Andrew's website. We'll also put that information about Terry's model. Appreciate Andrew sharing about that. But please reach out to us wherever you are in your journey, because we want to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. And we're always glad that you've been with us here on the podcast, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.